Chanukah Sameach all. Today's daf in Masechet Sanhedrin, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Tet. So we've got this fascinating, I think it's a very, very wonderful example of the many ways that Rebbe is able to construct a Mishnah so that it can be interpreted in so many different fashions that it carries an immense amount of information, and all of which is relevant, and allows us a great deal of flexibility in understanding how it is that it's meant to be supplied. It's basically what our Mishnah did, is it told us that there's a machlokas about the din of Motzi Shemra, and according to which, Rabbi Meir says that all you need is three witnesses, and according to Rabbanan, all you need is three dayanim, and which is what you usually need for dinei momenes. But according to the Rabbanan, we treat it as if it is a capital case, and you need 23. Why? So the Mishnah said, why? Because, after all, a din of Motzi Shemra includes dinei misa. So now we had a number of different ways of understanding that. What's amazing is that we're going to work out eight different ways to understand this Mishnah. So far, we talked about sort of the more fundamental ways. First, we had the machlokas of Ula and Rava, according to which Ula was Hashin and Lalas, which meant that even though it isn't currently a capital case, according to Rashi, it meant even though it isn't currently a capital case, it can easily turn into a capital case. Because we are concerned that in any type of juicy case where the media get involved, the Edom are certainly going to come forth from somewhere or another, so even though we don't know about it, we have to assume that we're going to be dealing with a din of nefoshes. Therefore, we need 23. Whereas Rabbi Meir says, no, we're not worried about that kind of thing. Whatever the case is currently, that's what it is. Then we had the other approach, which was Rava. These were the two fundamental approaches, Rizula and Rava, in which it really was an overall question that we can learn from. According to Rava, it's talking about that the original suit was actually a capital case, that the Baal had said that he has witnesses. We gathered together a full Sanhedrin Ketana of 23 to be able to be done this capital case. And then it turned out that he didn't really have any serious witnesses, and the judges disband. Now he says, well, I don't want to pay the ketuvah, and she's suing for the ketuvah. Again, this is what Rashi learns. Remember, according to Tosfos, we're talking not about the ketuvah at all. We're talking about, and then the father comes and he wants the 100 shekel, and this is a separate question of whether we didn't, what the din is to copy the 100 shekel, which is only momentous. And the question, according to this, is whether, again, a general question, are we chayshinan for the kavod of the rishonim? So the original witness, the original dayanim went home, and if we just get another three people or three of them and we're dita on the din, it's very insulting to the original call for forming that best. Okay. That was the approach that we had up until now, that was fundamental approaches. Then we start on a series of particularized approaches, meaning that we describe the particular case in the Mishnah of the Motzi Shemra, not as a general problem of how it is that we deal with the Poteitinim. So it's a question of whether we need to anticipate, according to Ula, a Bezdin that is going to be dealing with Nefashas, or whether we're Chashin and Lekovet, according to Rava. No. The other approaches are all very, very particularized. And what it's talking about, last thing that we had was, it happens to be that we're talking about a case over here where the woman was a very learned woman, and there was no Hatra'ah. And so there's a question about whether, if a person is so aware that they should not need Hatra'ah, whether Hatra'ah is still part of the absolute halacha, or whether it's only a logistic to make it clear that the person knows what they're doing, in which case, if she's an Isha Chavirah, she knows what she's doing. So as you can see, that's a very particular question. According to Rabbi Meir, he would say, well, You know, you're still going to need a trial, and therefore this is not a capital case. We don't have any useful witnesses because there was no trial. There are Rabbanan who say that you don't need hatra'ah for a chaver. According to them, we have a capital case. So it's just working out a heichi timtza. Where would you find a case like this as opposed to some fundamental case? Then we had the other question. Maybe they did give malchus, but they gave malchus, did give hasra'ah, but they gave hasra'ah for malchus. And the question is whether... Where generally we have this question about the lav anitim the azaras misas bezdin is going to be machayev you malchus at all. Well, we're going over here according to the shita that it is. And the machlokus is the machlokus in our Mishnah. Our Mishnah is a machlokus between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbanan. Whether in a case of malchus, do we also need esrim v'shlosha? We'll see the reason why coming daf. And dapim, I should say. And the Rabbanan who say that no, you only need three. That's where we got up to. Today we're holding on the fourth line on Daf Tet, and we're going to offer an additional few possibilities, all of which are possibilities that are Hechi Timtza. They are specific to the case that we have. So we're up to now the sixth possible way of understanding the Mishnah, Ravina. So Ravina Amar, Kigon Shenimtza Echad Min HaEdim Karov HaPasul. It happens to be that we're talking about a case where one of the witnesses, and there were more than two witnesses, and maybe we've got three witnesses. One of those three witnesses is found to be a relative or some other psul. Now the question is, if one of the relatives, I'm really confused this morning, if one of the witnesses is a relative, does that mean that we have to just throw out the entire testimony? Or can we just be mekayim the testimony with the remaining kosher witnesses? So that is actually a fascinating machlokas. And that would be the question over here. It happens to be a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi in the shita of Rabbi Akiva. So remember that we have a very strange pasuk. Al pish ha'im edim o shlosha edim. Shnayim edim o shlosha edim. What does the Torah mean when it says two witnesses or three witnesses? I mean, if two witnesses are enough, why in the world do we need to mention or three witnesses? It's one way to go and say, or four witnesses or five witnesses. I mean, it's ridiculous. So therefore, we have this very fascinating machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Rabbi Shimon about what exactly that's coming to teach us. And Rabbi Shimon said that actually it's coming to tell me a kula. Just like if you, these witnesses, you would have two witnesses, you would not make those witnesses responsible as Edim Zeimimim to be actually given kasher zamam if they plan to kill a guy. We will not kill those witnesses unless both of them are Edim Zamami. So too, says Rabbi Shimon, if you've got three witnesses, we won't kill any of those witnesses unless all three of them are Edim Zamami. And if 100, then all 100 of them. That's how Rabbi Shimon understands it. So Rabbi Akiva says, no, that's not how to understand it. And we start the sugya here. The Gemara is taking for granted that you know the first part of it, not that it's very important. But what's important to us is that Rabbi Akiva, Titzan, Rabbi Akiva Omer, no, no, it's not about making life easier for these witnesses. Actually, lo ba hakatuv lahakel hashlishi ela lahachmir. So why does we say that you have three witnesses? That's a chumrah. That's not a kula. And what it means is that you might have thought that if you have two witnesses, now a third witness shows up. He testifies to the same effect as the two witnesses. And now he claims, after it turns out that none of them were there and none of them were real witnesses, they're all Edim Zamamim, so the third witness says, look, you already had two witnesses without me. So it's really not important that I said this guy murdered, you know, so how about, see you later, alligator. And no, no, come back here, says Rabbi Akiva. You too will be responsible and will have to face the chair because the Torah is being machmer that all three witnesses are responsible, even though the third one wasn't really necessary. So it's a chumrah. And the way he puts it is, So the third witness, even though you'd say he's a third wheel, he nonetheless is just as responsible as the other two wheels. And, says Rabbi Akiva, you could learn an important moral principle from this, namely, that in Bog, this is the way that the Torah, Kach onash hakatuv, et hanitpalo ovrei avera, anke ovrei avera, somebody who also joins in doing an avera, and the Torah considers him to be fully responsible, as if he is actually necessary, even though he's really only an accomplice, but nonetheless, he's fully responsible. And we know that the Torah gives 500 times greater zachar as we saw for mitzvahs. It's 2,000 deres versus 4 deres. So we can imagine how much zachar somebody who gives tzedakah to Rabbi Kaplan's fund, even though there's so many other people giving tzedakah, imagine how much zachar comes to that individual who is nitpal to the mitzvah, even though he can say, my share was so small, doesn't matter. It's as if he did the entire thing. That's why the staff is here today for Hanukkah to remind you. Don't forget, all of the information is posted on our WhatsApp. Anyway, so kol shekein halachas kama v'kama shishalem sachar to the nitfal ose mitzvah ke ose mitzvah. Umashnayim. Furthermore, I'll tell you another thing that we learn out from the comparison of two edim to three edim. Mashnayim nimtzum eichad meyam korov oipasol. If one is found posel, obviously there's no edus because you don't have two witnesses. So too, if one of the three is found korov oipasol, the entire thing is canceled. And what if there were even 100? Minayin shafilu meyav, the Torah only mentioned shlosha. Because it repeats edim, apishnayim edim, or shlosha edim. So that means that it's adding also whatever it is that created the edus. Any kat of edim, no matter how large, is considered to be one powerful kat of edim. Now, how does this work out for our Mishnah? There's a machlokas between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi about how far to take what Rabbi Akiva said. So Rabbi Yossi says, when do we say that it's all considered to be one and all thing is batal? That's b'dinei nefashot, avo b'dinei mamonot, titkayem edut bashar. Actually, says Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Akiva is only saying this legabe cases of nefashot, capital cases. But where we're talking about monetary issues, there, we would actually utilize, however many, if we have two or more kosher witnesses, we will use them, despite the fact that some of them are found to be korov or posel, because there's a special halacha when it comes to the chiyuvim of dinei misa, which remember we had vihitzilu ha'eda. Vihitzilu ha'eda means you are supposed to do whatever you can to save this guy's life in court. Okay, so then that means to be dorish the posek of shnayim or shlosha, to be dorish it in a way that will save the guy's wife life. But when it comes to the inyanim of mominus, why would we do that? That's what actually the way that Rabbi Yossi understands. Rabbi says, no, it makes no difference. Echa dinei mominus. It's exactly the same. Even one witness out of 100 who is not suitable actually cancels the entire cut of edim. But when do we say this? Bisman sheit rubahem. This is only in cases where there's the onesh of misa. It's only if the edim actually gave hatra'ah and warned the person that if you do this, you are going to be chayav. But if one of the witnesses didn't bother being matre, then that's an indication that he's only there as an observer, and he's not coming to be mechayev as a witness. So then he's just considered to be a casual observer. Look, if you don't say that, then how are we ever going to have witnesses? Somebody wants to murder somebody. All he needs to do is murder him in the middle of Times Square, And then there's bound to be two brothers or relatives that are walking together. They witness the murder, and then one of the witnesses is found to be a Korev, and then they throw out the case, and we can't get, I mean, that's crazy. And therefore, it only makes sense. What are you going to do? If you happen to be together with your brother in a crowd of people and you witnessed something, so that means that now there's no way to bring the guy to court because two brothers witnessed it? No, the point is that casual observers are not witnesses. So therefore, what makes you a witness is taking the responsibility of warning the guy the way a witness does, and then we understand that you're coming to be an active witness. So therefore, if we take this as the Hechitimsa, let's imagine the case in the Mishnah is exactly this case, that we have more than the necessary number of witnesses, and one of them is found to be a brother or another relative that apostles. And the question is, if one of them did not say, don't do it, he didn't give the hatra'ah, that's the machlokas. If you hold that the din is that you're going to, if you don't give the hatra'ah, so then you're not an aid and you don't apostle the kat of aidim, so then this is a capital case. And if it's a capital case, you need 23, like the Rabbanan say. So that means the Rabbanan, they hold like Rabbi, that if you have someone who is there and he's a relative, he's still not going to make the case canceled because he never gave Hatra'ah. Masha Enkein, Rabbi Meir agrees with Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, even though he didn't give Hatra'ah, too bad. No way for this to be a capital case. So as soon as this comes along and the guy says, you know, we have witnesses that my wife slept with this, or my arusa slept with this guy, an adulterous relationship. And, well, one of these braden that you're bringing here is a brother. Yes, but he didn't give atra'ah. It doesn't matter. According to Rabbi Meir, he holds with Rabbi Yossi. And therefore, even if he didn't give atra'ah, the whole thing is bottle. So what do we need 23? Therefore, we only need 3. Again, a hechitimtza. Hechitimtza means, where would you find this halacha? Hechitimtza? Only in such and such a unique situation. Now, sometimes a Mishnah is written in order to include a set of possible cases, which are, you would say, okay, but that's a laboratory case. Yes, that's true. It's highly unlikely that that's the case that we're talking about. But if we can be ma'amid the machlokas between Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim in that fashion, then that might be what we're referring to over here. So this would provide us another explanation. This is explanation number 6. So we have 2 fundamental explanations that have to do with the way we relate to the question of formation of a court or cancellation of a court that had been formed. That's the machlokas between Ula and Rava. And then we've got so far 4 possible explanations giving us a specific case where it would make sense that there was a machlokas, Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim, about some particular din that might be relevant to the Mishnah. Let's try yet another explanation. Number 7. He boys say, I'll give you another explanation. Maybe we're talking about where we have hatra'ah, but it was not from the witnesses. Someone else gave hatra'ah. And what was the machlokas then? Actually, here, maybe Rabbi Meir and the Chachamim are arguing about another Mishnah in Makos, which says that the Rabbi Yossi and the Rabbanan argue about le'olam, according to Rabbi Yossi, le'olam eno nerag ad shu pi shnei edav matrin bo, shenemar al pi shnayim edim. So the Tanakhama of the Mishnah says it's not important that the edim should be the ones who issue the hatra'ah. It's only important that the hatra'ah should have been issued. And that's what we're talking about. Here we have got a case where someone was standing there. He's not one of the Edim. And he announced, don't do this. You're going to be Chayav Misa. He's not the one that came to court now to be testifying. So that's the Machlokas. According to the Tanakhama, that is a perfectly good Hatra'ah. And if that's the case, this is a situation of requiring 23 because it's a capital case. Rebbe Meir, on the other hand, holds that this is not a capital case because, according to him, the halacha is like Rebbe Yossi. And Rebbe Yossi says only if the actual Edom are the one who give the hatra'ah. And that's not what happened here. So when he shows up and the Baal who claimed the adultery says, here's my testimony, we say to him, sorry, sir, but this is invalid. And therefore, we're just going to have a bezdin of three to deal with the problem of her ketubah, or as Tosus learns, to deal with the problem of the payment of the fine of the Meir Shekel. So that would be the seventh possibility. You know what? I'll give you an eighth possibility. You want another specific case? Maybe it's talking about, so in order to understand this possibility, now note that when we construct a Mishnah that is built around these possibilities, the Mishnah is immensely information rich, right? Because take a look at how many different sugyas we've examined here that we wouldn't have known anything about if we wouldn't have to work out all the hechit timtzis. So it's a brilliant way of actually going through so many of the different halachas and keeping them in mind, because what were they arguing about, Rebbe Meir and the Rabbanan? And then you've got this exercise of remembering every possible din. Here's another din that you didn't think of. There are two different types of cross-examinations of witnesses. One of them are called chakirot, and one of them are called bidikot. Now, the chakirot, those are the questions that are absolutely essential in order for us to be able to make these witnesses into Edim Zomim. So these are the kind of questions which are going to identify precisely when this happened, precisely where this happened, and that will make them kosher witnesses if they pass and agree with each other, because then they are open to attack as Edim Zomim. Only witnesses who are open to attack, that's edut she'ata yachol lahazima, Mr. Gavi, stop hiding there together with Ori. I will ask her to write it down if you can't write down anymore. I see she's already handling boost. She can handle a pen, undoubtedly. And time to let her loose for the daf. And so, you're going to have to write this down. Edut she'ata yachol lahazima. Your edus needs to be at least potentially attacked as edim zomimim. In order to potentially attack them, we have to be able to narrow down the precise location and time. Those are called the chakirot. Then we have a general cross-examination, which are called the bedikot. The bedikot are not essential questions. They're the type of questions that are just there to trip up the witnesses. So if they would, let's say you say, okay, was the murderer wearing boots at the time? So one witness says he was wearing boots. One witness says, no, he was wearing shoes. That's the end of their testimony. The murder took place, as they said, in a particular location, which was under a fig tree. A fig tree, really. How thick were the stems of the figs on the fig tree? Now, that's totally irrelevant to the case, but if the witnesses contradict each other, then that would be, l'chora, a problem in the cross-examination. I mean, they may say, I don't know, I didn't look at the figs, what's the matter with you? Fine, then of course there's nothing wrong. But if they contradict each other, then we've got a question. That would be the machlokas, and that might be the eighth possibility. So in the extra kind of questions that are trip-up questions, they contradicted each other. But they didn't trip up on there was no contradiction on the essential chakirot. That is a machlokas between Ben Zakkai. Ben Zakkai is a very not nice way of referring to Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai. However, when Rabbi Yochanan Ben Zakkai was still not Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, he was Mr. Ben Zakkai, and he was a Talmud still, and he didn't have his smicha. So to preserve the Seder Hadvarim at the time that Ben Zakkai, he was still Ben Zakkai, so we keep calling him Ben Zakkai, even though it gives you a little bit of a, come on, man. But anyway, this is the machlokas between Ben Zakkai and the Rabbana. because the Mishnah that we're going to have later says that there was a Maisa where Ben Zakkai, actually, he cross-examined the witnesses to see if he could trip them up about how thick the stems were on the figs of the tree beneath which the murder took place. So, according to him, that would actually cancel the testimony. But the Rabbanan disagreed with him, and they said, look, things that are completely irrelevant to the case are, in fact, irrelevant to the contradictions of the testimony. So that would explain the Machlokas. The Rabbanan over here agree with the Rabbanan over there, who say that even if they're tripped up, it doesn't make any difference because it was irrelevant to the case what kind of boots he was wearing or how thick the stems are of the figs. And therefore, over here, this is a case that requires 23 dayanim, because it's a case in which we may end up with a chiyuv nefashot. Ashenken, Rabbi Meir, who agrees with Ben Zakkai, and in our case, we trip them up with some type of trivial detail. According to him, well, there's no way that we're going to make this a capital case. Therefore, Rabbi Meir said, actually, we only need three. That gives us our beautiful information-rich Mishnah, in which we have eight different possibilities. Just to remind you once again, according to Ula, the question is whether Chashinan Lelaz, which was a Machlokas Rashi Tosfos, according to Rashi, Chashinan Lelaz strangely means we are worried about juicy details that may bring forth testimony, because people love to talk about it. And therefore, we need to prepare up in advance. We need to prepare what it might turn into a case of Chiyuv Misa. Rava says the question over here is, we're talking about where it was initially, 23, and everybody knows it was 23 because he claimed that he had witnesses. We rapidly discovered that he never was able to produce the witnesses. And so the court packed up and went back home for breakfast. So over here, the Machlokas is whether we're Chashinan for the covet of the Bezdin, and we say once we already had established this court, we're not going to deal with this case, even about the financial details of the case, unless it's with that same Bezdin. Okay, Abaya was the first one who said that, no, this may be a case which all agree we're not Chashinan Lelaz, all may agree that we are Chashinan for the covet of Bezdin. The question over here is whether it was up front a capital case or not. So Abayas, what Echitimtza was, well, they told her that she's going to be Chayav Misa. They didn't tell her that she'll be Chayav Skila. So according to him, the Machlokas was, do we require the specific Misa in order for it to be called a real Hatra'ah? That was a Machlokas. It had not the sheet of Rabbi Yehuda. Fine. Rav Papa said it is a specific case. The question was over here that the woman was a Chavera. And since she was a Chavera and there was no Hatra'ah, the Machlokas is whether a Chavera requires Hatra'ah. Rav Ashi said it's talking about where they gave her Hatra'ah, but the Hatra'ah was from Malkus. And the Machlokas, therefore, is the Machlokas of our Mishnah, between Rabbi Shmuel and the Rabbanan, is a Bezdin for Malkus. Does it require 23 Dayanim? And that was number five. Ravina, he offers three possibilities. His first possibility was, we're talking about where there were three witnesses. One of them was a Karav, but he didn't give Hatra'ah. And the Machlokas is, if you don't give Hatra'ah, are you considered to be a witness? The Machlokas with Yossi and Rebbe. If you were, then I'll leave it to Rebbe Akiva. You would passel the entire thing, which is what Rebbe Meir holds. And therefore, there is no capital case because you don't have any witnesses, since they're all batel because of the one brother. The second Echitimtza, the Ibayis Ema of Ravina, is that there was a Hatra'ah, but it wasn't given by any of the witnesses. The third Echitimtza of the Ibayis Ema of Ravina was that there was a contradiction in the cross-examination of the Edim, but only in irrelevant details to the case, and that's the Machlokas. If there's a Hakhasha in a question that is irrelevant to the actual murder, Does that nonetheless trip up the witnesses and now they're not kosher, which is what Rebbe Meir holds, and therefore we don't need 23 because we don't have witnesses that are relevant to a capital case, Mashenken, according to Rabban, if it's not in some serious issue, like the Chachonim will argue on Ben Zakkai, then it doesn't trip up the witnesses. Okay, now, we said before that we're talking about cases over here where we've raised the idea over here of Edim Zomimim. So remember, Edim Zomimim means that another pair of witnesses came along, and they say, how could you claim to have witnessed this particular event? We personally have no idea whether the event took place or not, but one thing we darn well do know, you weren't there to see it, because at that particular time, you were with us in a completely different location watching Lemiz, and therefore, you couldn't possibly be the witnesses. So that is a Kiddush Akra, that the Edim, the second Edim, are believed because they directly attack the Edim themselves. They're not attacking the testimony. It's not a hakhasha. It is a hazama. So let's talk about a case here where there were Edim Zomimim. So let's imagine, says Rav Yosef, the husband comes along. And we talked about this case before where we tried to figure out why it would be that there was a bittul of the Edim of the Baal. The Baal comes along. He brings witnesses that, in fact, she had been Mizana. And the father now comes, brings witnesses who say that, no, it couldn't have been such testimony because they weren't even in town at that time. So, Evi Ave Dini Zimula Ede Abaal. So what happens then? So, well, you would say, okay, these witnesses that had come originally that the husband brought had two things that were going to happen because of their testimony. Number one, they were going to actually get the wife killed with their false testimony, or what the Torah calls false testimony, because they weren't around. Furthermore, they also would not have allowed her to collect the ksuvah, because she would have lost her ksuvah. So there were basically two different implications. Now, one of those is a chiyuv misa. One of those is a chiyuv mamah. Is, in the event that it turns out that the wife never did commit this adultery, because it turns out that there are Edim Zomimim, and therefore they now are responsible for what they would have done, because as the Torah says, v'asitem lo kasher zamam la'asod la'achiv. It's the plot that they originally had in mind, but we turn it around and we apply it to them. You wish to get her knocked off, we'll knock you off. You wish to have her ketuvah stolen from her, we'll have you pay for that ketuvah, which of course doesn't mean it's the full ketuvah, because as remember the Mishnah in Makot points out, a ketuvah may ultimately be paid anyway, because maybe the guy will anyway have to pay the ketuvah. So what it means is, as the Mishnah explains over there, is we analyze the value of the option of collecting her ketuvah on the market, and that's what it would be that they would have to pay. Anyway, but so we have two chiyuvim. Do these edim, before we kill them, do they have to pay also for the ketuvah that she would have lost? No. Why is that? Because we are never able to be mechayev both a payment and a death penalty for the same event. Okay, now this we learn out of Psukim, which we're going to be discussing, and therefore the idea of Arisha Achat, not Shtei Rishoyot, or other Psukim, means that we cannot be mechayev them two things. Therefore, if they are going to be killed for this testimony, then they do not pay her for the loss. Now, let's take the same case, says Rabbi Yosef. What happens now is that the husband comes out and he brings Edim that show that these Edim, who claim to have been in Lemiz with the first set of Edim, were actually with them in a completely different location, not watching Lemiz, but actually watching the new version of The Lion King. And therefore, they are Edim Zomimim. Aha! So now, in a strange twist of fate, what happens is that as Mustafa comes out, somebody is going to be in big trouble. Now, in this case, what happens is the Edom that had come to be Mazim, the first set of Edom, in this case, they have to pay, and they also are Chayev Misa. How is that? Because there are two separate cases over here. See, the first case was, before we went ahead and we were Mazim them, they were coming to cause this woman a dual loss, her life and her ketuvah. But over here, they're causing two completely separate issues. They are coming to have the original witnesses of the Baal. They want to get them knocked off because they went to try to knock off the original witnesses, right? So that is because of their testimony against those witnesses. But they were also coming to be Mechayev the husband, because now that his Edom were discovered to be Zomimim, which they weren't, he was going to have to pay 100 shekel fine. So those are two separate cases. They owed the husband 100 shekel, and they owe the Edom that they were going to execute, they owe them their lives. Well, in that case, we have Mamon Lezeh, Unefashot Lezeh. We have two completely different chiyuvim, and according to Rabbi Yosef, the din is that if it's two separate chiyuvim, the two separate people, then we do say that you pay and also can be involved in a capital punishment for the same event. That itself is a machlokas. But this is Rabbi Yosef's svar. Now, we get into some other fascinating questions about how do we constitute the relationship of the individual to the testimony. This is, we've had this sugya before, this is the question which is known as palginan dibure. Do we split what a person says in a way that allows us to accept testimony about one part of his statement and to ignore the other part of his statement? So let's imagine a case like this. A guy comes into court and claims that Mr. X raped him. So what's the din? Now, he is obviously involved in the case, but the truth is that Mr. X raping anybody would be Mechayev Mr. X, and therefore, he who is saying that, well, Mr. X raped me, is believed together with an additional aid, and he and that additional aid can actually have Mr. X held chayev as a capital crime for raping this man. It happens to be him, but that's irrelevant. But suppose he says, actually, it was consensual sex. So now we have a problem. What's the problem? Because by his own words, he is saying that he was consensually involved in a chiyuv nefashot. Well, if that's the case, then he is saying that he is inappropriate as an aid, because the Torah says, Al tashet rasha aid. It doesn't really say that. It says, Al tashet yatcha im rasha liot et chamas. But we always sort of combine that in the simple words, Al tashet rasha aid. So now, how can we believe what he's saying about this other guy? Because if we believe what he's saying, then we can't believe what he's saying. So this seems to be sort of a catch-22. If we believe that you were involved with this guy consensually, so then we can't believe you. If we don't believe you, so then we can believe you. But then we can't believe you. So this is one of those expressions of a catch-22. And we would think that the din is that we cannot believe your testimony. And that, says Rabbi Yosef, is exactly the case. Since by his own words, he's not able to be an aid, so there we only have one aid, the other guy. Rava says, no. The truth is, he is not a witness when it comes to himself, because he's related to himself, isn't he? Forget about his relationship to the case. If he is walking in to say, I am a Rasha. Now forget about the case. The case over here has two witnesses. There are two people that say that this guy actually sodomized someone, right? Happens to be that one of those people at the same time is testifying about a completely different issue. namely, I am a Russia, and you cannot believe what I'm saying. Okay, so if that's the case, we don't believe a word that he's saying about himself. Excuse me, sir, aren't you related to you? Well, yes, I am. Well, then you're not a good witness against you. But I tell you, well, we don't really care what you have to say about you. If you can bring a witness that you are a Russia, that's something else. But so far, we don't know anything about your being a Russia. So as far as we're concerned, you're a perfectly valid witness who is testifying against this guy in Achiev Nefashas, and therefore we will accept your testimony. So that's called Palginan Dibure. What it is that he's saying about himself is we don't even hear it because he's not acceptable as a witness. He's only a witness vis-a-vis this other party that he's testifying against. That is called Palginan Dibure, which I think Avi has already well established. We don't have to, and maybe Ori is a bit too young for this particular topic, so we'll keep her out of this one. Boost or no boost. Now, Omar Rava, so let me tell you another case. How about if this, relevant to the case we're talking about over here, about the Batsi Shemra, how about this guy, somebody says, this particular man actually slept with my wife. So now he is going ahead and he is a witness against the adulterer at the same time that he is witnessing his wife's adultery. So what's then over there? Say I, says Rava, that he and another witness can actually join together in order to kill the adulterer, but not in order to have any impact on his wife, because his wife is a relative of his, and therefore he is not accepted in his testimony against his wife. Now, ask the Gemara, this sounds like the same thing, isn't it? Maika Mashmalan, are you telling us again the same thing, that Palginan Dibura, and that we can split what it is that you say into the part that's relevant to the Beis Din and into the part that's not relevant to the Beis Din? Is this not the same issue? Haino hach, why do you need to repeat yourself, Rava? Says the Gemara, because I might have thought that Adam Karov Eitzel Atzmo Amrina, but Eitzel Ishto Lo Amrina. Now this is, on the face of it, ridiculous, but we'll have to do a little bit of thinking about what this might mean. So you might have thought that a person is a relative for himself, but he's not a relative to his wife. Gamash Malan's Rava, that it's exactly the same. Now, we know for a fact, of course, as we're going to see later on in the Masechet, a wife is one of the relatives that you cannot testify against. That's 100% given. So that's not what we might have thought. We're talking about, you might have thought that he's not considered to be a relative in terms of the din of Palginan Dibure. Now that's strange. Why would I have thought that? What do you mean in terms of Palginan Dibure? Isn't it the same issue? Let's put on our thinking caps and recognize that the two issues, in fact, are totally different. In the case, the first case where we say Adam Korov Eitzel Atzmo, we had two separate cases. One case was, are you a Russia? That has nothing to do with any relevance to the particular case that we're examining now about a sexual assault case, right? Are you a Russia? I don't know. Who says you're a Russia? You do. You don't have anything to say about your being a Russia. Now, you have anything to say about the sexual assault case? Yes, this guy actually slept with this man. Thank you. So we hear that testimony. We don't hear the other testimony. But over here, how can you say that what it is that he's saying about his wife is irrelevant to the adultery case? It's the same case, right? It's not a different issue. So now the question is, I understand that if this guy had come in and he had said, I saw this man sleeping with a married woman. Now, the fact that it happens to be his wife is not what it is that he's testifying. He's testifying that this guy was sleeping with a married woman. So we should be able to accept that because we don't even need Palgin and Dibure for that, because it's not relevant necessarily to the whole case that we're examining over here. So now the question is, do we say, but nonetheless, it's all one case. If we cannot believe him about who the victim is, how can we believe him that there was a victim? This is one case. A slept with B. If A didn't sleep with B, according to him, so then we can't listen to him about this case. Here to say Palgin and Dibure does not make the same sense at all, does it? So therefore, when it comes to the issue of Palgin and Dibure, I might have thought that in this case, we don't view it as a Palgin and Dibure. Now, there's a big machlokas rishonim about the question of what direction that tends in. And I'll tell you that in 1 second. But before we get there, I want to give you a completely different approach, which is the Ravitz approach to the entire sugya about why the two cases are very different. The Ravitz has a brilliant approach by which he says, the din of an Adam Korov Etel Atzmo is never the same as being a Korov. Adam Korov Etzel Atzmo means that he is not a witness. Witnesses mean that you're talking about something else. You're witnessing. You are not a witness when you are testifying something about yourself. Maybe a confessor, whatever it is. A confessee, I should say. But you're certainly not a witness. You are the person. That means that the moment that you walk into Beis Din, we don't see a witness. But how about when a husband walks into Beis Din? We do see a witness. Our only question is he a kosher witness? So now the question is whether his being a kosher witness, can we separate out the element which makes him the non-kosher witness from the general element of his witnesshood, so to speak? That's a completely different issue. And I would have thought that when it comes to that, once we have a witness, we can't split a witness's testimony into two parts. Moshe Enkin, when he was talking about himself, we weren't splitting anything at all. The witness, we're completely accepting. The confessee has nothing to do with us. Courts don't have mokum for confessees. That's the Ravitz approach to the sugya, which is a completely different way of looking at the sugya. But getting back to what we're looking at the sugya, now the question is, okay, so if you're telling me that essentially all that he is saying is that he's testifying against this person, and we do not hear his testimony vis-a-vis his wife, because he's not kosher for that, and we would say Palgin and Dibure, then, here's the way Rashi learns it, then we ought to say, that since once we've accepted his testimony about this other person, when it's joined with this third party, and he's able to be mitzaref, we should say, well, migo, once we've accepted in the court his testimony about this person, the fact that the person that this man slept with is his wife is also accepted because it's irrelevant to the case. We've decided that this person is chayav misa for sleeping with a married woman. That's all that's important. So if the male is chayav for sleeping with the married woman, so then the married woman is chayav for sleeping with the male. And we should say that therefore we even believe him vis-a-vis the wife. This is how Rashi understands it, and it's rather shocking. We'll say, instead of saying the Palgin and Dibure to kill the man, we'll actually kill the woman, which goes beyond what we thought we were saying before. Of course, the Rush and the Ran take it in the other direction. Since we cannot accept his testimony about the victim, we cannot accept the testimony about the case. And in this case, we wouldn't say Palgin and Dibure to allow it to be accepted. It would be different, and we would say we don't accept it. Therefore, Kamash Malan, again, Kamash Malan, we don't say the Migo, Kamash Malan, we don't say the Ravitz approach, and so on and so forth, whatever the Kamash Malan is. So this is a very, very rich sugya about how to understand the nature of the elements of the testimony to each other, the status of a witness to himself or to other relatives, and how it would be possible to relate the sugyas of Pargina Diburo to the sugya of Eder Shebotla Mikzoso Botla Kula, which is the way the Rav, the Ran, actually approaches the whole sugya. And he says Rashi's approach is nuts. All over Shas, we say that if you cannot have the entire testimony, and that is a Gavi point, which I think is kedai to restate here, in case we missed it. Eder shebatla miksata batla kula. So if you cannot accept the testimony about who the victim is, how can you accept the test? That is not nogea pagina dibur. That should be the opposite. So all over Shas, we say eder shebatla miksata batla kula. And now Rashi says, but in this case, we should say just the opposite. That the Eder Sheniskaima Miksasa, Niskaima Kula? How could you say such a crazy thing? Anyway, that is his whole taina on the sugya. As you can see, there's lots of fun for those who are able to dedicate a year to this particular daf. Now, and remember, however, remember the very important psak of the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, which is that if you don't have a year to spend on this sugya, it's only in Olam HaZeh that you don't have the year. However, once you got into the sugya, you've got eternity to pursue this sugya. And any sugya that you've gotten into will provide you an eternity of examination, of endless implications, which end up actually exposing how to understand quantum entanglement and God knows what else that come out of this Pargina Diburo, which turns out to be exactly nogea, all of those fundamental questions. And so, taina is the Shulchan Aruch HaRav, make sure that you've learned every sugya at least once. So maybe you'll say, yeah, but I haven't retained anything and I don't have time to really get into it. There's lots of time to come. All right, that would mean that if you don't know what you're talking about in Mikvaot, it still might be worth a dip, a toesy at least, into Mikvaot. Something to consider very seriously. All right, gentlemen, Freilich and Chanukah to all. Now the question is whether on this Freilich and Chanukah day can we continue on in our mikvaot to make sure.
I say the mikvaot is a more immersive subject.
Yes, it is.
About Mishnah Gimel.
I think Reb Daniel had a question.